Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
But give us an example of how, because a lot of people believe it right now, especially while we're negotiating the latest trade deal, that the United States always is out negotiated on trade deals. Give me a good specific example.
Well, because
of that.
China and all of these people, Mexico is the new China, by the way. Mexico is unbelievable what they're doing with cars and with industry. They are taking our business like we're a bunch of babies. We don't have our best and our brightest negotiating force. We have a bunch of losers. We have a bunch of political hacks. We have diplomats, and China puts the people, I mean, hey, look, I know the smartest guys on Wall Street. I know our best negotiators. I know the overrated guys, the underrated guys, the guys that nobody ever heard of that are killers, that are great. We got to use those people.
Who would be your guy?
I'll give you an example.
Who's your Secretary of Treasury?
Joe, let me give you an example. Carolyn Kennedy. I see 60 Minutes. She goes in, she says to the White House, oh, I'd love a job. Well, would you like to be ambassador to Japan? Really? Wow. She's like a negotiator for us in Japan. It's ridiculous. Japan is doing a number on us with the yen. You know, they just devalued the yen yet again.
Right.
We don't have people that know what's going on.
So again, specifically, who, give us a name on Wall Street that you might consider as a Secretary of Treasury
that would be a tough negotiator. I'll tell you what. I'd like guys like Jack Welch. I like guys like Henry Kravis. I'd love to bring my friend Carl Icahn. You know, I mean, we have people that are great. We have people that are better than any of their negotiators. We don't use them, Joe.
Yeah.
We use people that are soft and weak and, frankly, stupid and incompetent.
What's your position on the issue of whether or not to raise the minimum wage?
I would say leave the minimum wage. That's not the problem, Mika. Whether if somebody's getting an extra, the problem is we have to create jobs.
People can't live on what they're being paid.
The problem is we have to get jobs in the country. The jobs are being taken by Mexico and by China. The jobs are being taken by India. You know, you call up American Express and you talk to somebody on the phone. They have an accent. You say, where are you from? We're talking to them in India. Yeah. And I say, we can't do that ourselves. We have to bring back jobs.
But don't you think wages are a part of that issue? And, okay, obviously you don't agree with raising the minimum wage, but do you agree that stagnating wages are a huge part of the jobs crisis in this country? And if so, what would you do to fix that?
Gross domestic product for the first quarter went below zero. That's unheard of. It's unheard of. I mean, where do you see going below zero? In China, it goes up 8%, 9%. India, you look at these countries. Look at what's happening in Japan now. By the way, Japan is back big league. They just devalued the yen. People are buying Komatsu tractors instead of Caterpillar tractors. I'm telling you, we're in trouble. We have a president who is incompetent, doesn't know what he's doing, and this country is going to go down. We have got a lot of problems in this country.
Two things, Donald. One, you're smart enough to know that words are
weapons.
What do you
mean smart enough? What does that mean?
You're smart enough to know that words are weapons.
Well, I went to the Wharton School of Finance. I have to sort of say that because, you know, like somebody says, like, you know, you're smart enough. But go ahead.
Words are weapons. So you have to have some form of collegiality if you're president of the United States.
I get along with everybody.
Okay.
I get along with the Chinese. By the way, people think I don't like China. I love China. I sold an apartment for $55 million to a Chinese gentleman. The largest bank in the world from China, by far the largest bank. Citibank is like, I asked him, Citibank is like a small subsidiary, they told me, okay? The largest bank in the world is a tenant of mine in Trump Tower. I have buildings. I own the Bank of America building. Big deal. I own the Bank of America building in San Francisco. I deal with China. I have a great relationship with China.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. That, of course, was Donald Trump, and he was talking about China. And this may surprise some of you. Actually, in some ways, I agree with Donald Trump. I don't say that very often. But when it comes to the fact that China's markets, China's economy is affecting ours, well, that's true. China, for the second day, has devalued the yen. And what's going on the other side of the planet absolutely affects ours. You want to know why our market is roiling, why our stock market is way down, why your earnings in the stock market are down? Well, China is devaluing its currency, the yuan. So why does China affect us so much? And what does the devaluation mean? And how does it affect, well, our trade? There's a lot of interesting economic questions here. And I haven't talked about the economy for a while. And I figure on a day like today, when our markets are roiling, when China's what it's doing, it really is affecting us over here. We should talk a little bit about it. Donald Trump's talking about it, and he's right that China is messing up our economy. Where he's wrong is this idea that China is going to surpass us, or we're going to fall apart. In fact, the reason why China has to devalue its currency, which makes our dollar stronger and their currency weaker, is precisely because our economy is so much stronger than the Chinese economy. Thank you, Obama. Way to go. Way to make our economy much better than China's and Europe's. And we're doing so well that the other countries are taking actions to stimulate their economy, like you did. Like you did after 2009. Thanks, Obama. Way to teach the world how to make their economies better. Well, that's actually what happened. What happened was when we had our great financial crisis, the George Bush recession of 2008, the greatest recession since the Great Depression, what happened was there was not enough lending. Everyone was afraid to lend. The banks were failing. There were too many businesses that were too big to fail, and that meant that when they failed, we had systematic risk. All throughout our economy went downhill because, let's face it, a bunch of Wall Street brokerage firms and insurance companies and bankers decided to manipulate the system, and they bet too much. They bet a lot more than they had, and they could do that because we didn't have the protections that we used to have under acts like Glass-Steagall and other things that Elizabeth Warren talks about. And our economy collapsed, and the world's economy collapsed with it. When President Obama became president, he did several things. First thing he did was the stimulus package. Remember that? Now, it was too small, to be sure. We could have done a lot more, but that started putting money into the economy. But the other thing that actually had more impact than even President Obama's stimulus package was Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chair, and the new Federal Reserve Chair that Barack Obama appointed, Janet Yellen. And they proceeded to do something, and this is all fancy economic stuff, but it matters, and it matters to your life. It changes how our economy goes. It means that unemployment went down and inflation went down. They did something called quantitative easing. And before your eyes glaze over, if you know what I'm talking about, that's fine. If you don't, quantitative easing is basically putting a ton of money in the economy. Basically, the Federal Reserve is buying up government treasury bills, but the long and the short of it is it's keeping interest rates close to zero, indeed arguably even below zero. But that means that you can borrow a lot cheaper, you can afford to buy that house, you can afford to buy that car. It gets the economy moving, and our economy's been moving a bit by fits and starts, not so much because of us, but because of other economies around the world. We talked about a month ago about Greece, a country that's failing, a country that has too much debt, a country that could not devalue its currency to make things cheaper, to make it easier for Greece to compete in the world market, because their currency is not the drachma. There is no Greek currency. It's the euro. There used to be a Greek currency, but ever since the 1990s, Greece has been part of the euro, the European currency, and the European currency is not going to devalue because Germany's economy and to a lesser extent, France and the UK and Italy, they have strong economies. But China is starting to have a weak economy. China actually leads the world in growth. You may not know this. You probably know that we are the largest economy in the world. It used to be Japan was second. Not anymore. China, for several years now, has been the second largest economy in the world. Still, maybe half ours. Still not close to us, but they're in second place. And a lot of people were scared that China was going to overtake the world, just like in the 1980s, we were afraid of Japan. Well, China hasn't done so well, because when you have a huge centralized economy, when you have the government basically propping up the stock market and doing everything in a very opaque way with a lot of corruption, as you would expect, the Chinese dictatorship, it means that it's hard to know what's there, what's real, what is actually things that the Chinese are producing, and what are things that the government is sort of propping up. So China, which used to grow 7% a year, very, very fast growth, but you got to remember, China is a third world country that's trying to become a first world country. That's why it has so much pollution and all those other things that destroy their cities. In any case, China devalued its currency. They made the yuan cheaper compared to the dollar, the yuan. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I fully admit my Chinese is a little bit rusty. Ni hao, that's about all I know. Anyway, but they made their currency cheaper, which makes their products cheaper. So if you think we've got cheap Chinese goods now, just wait till around the corner. It also makes our dollar go higher. It makes it harder for us to compete. It makes it harder for the Chinese to buy American products. And the argument is that China is, in effect, manipulating the market. They are devaluing its currency. And after all, currency is the kind of thing that can just go up and down in the free market. If people think the dollar is worth way more than the Chinese currency, people can just build it up, bid it up. That's our dollar fluctuates against the euro, fluctuates against the Canadian dollar and the Australian dollar. But in manipulating it as, let's face it, as a dictatorship, a non-capitalist dictatorship can do, they can very much harm the United States. So, first of all, we have to concede, as Donald Trump would not, that the reason our economy is so strong compared to Europe, compared to China, is, again, due to the monetary and fiscal policies of one President Barack Hussein Obama. Thanks, Obama. So, that's the good news. The bad news is that China is definitely taking steps to make its markets better and our markets worse. And where I agree with Donald Trump is that I want to see President Obama fight back against China, not militarily, but in a trade way, to try to maybe bring a World Trade Organization violation. The heart of the problem, and this is going to go into the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, which there was an interesting mixture of right and left that almost brought it down. President Obama supports it. The business Republicans support it. But populists on the left and the right, and me, oppose it because it basically lowers American labor costs. We already have in the United States very weak unions. And the TPP allows people in Vietnam, another dictatorship, another non-free market, non-capitalist country, to be paid, I don't know, 50 cents a day, so they can make the goods cheaper than our American workers can. The TPP would be fine, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if we were just talking about reducing trade restrictions between us and Japan or Singapore or South Korea or other rich industrialized nations. But when it comes to China, well, we already have a deal with China. When it comes to Vietnam, Malaysia, these very poor dictatorial countries, that's where it really harms American labor. So sometimes populism can be right. Sometimes, like a broken clock, even Donald Trump is right twice a day. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So, you know what? I gave you your homework. You did your homework. And now it's time for dessert. We talked about the intricacies of the United States economy and how it all interrelates with China and how Chinese devaluation is affecting the economy and the details of how it all works. And you're welcome to call in about that if you want. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. My guess is not too many folks, though, will want to talk about that. I understand. Like I said, that was your homework. Now, or your meat and vegetables, as it were. So I don't mix my metaphors. Now it's time for dessert. I want to talk about the conflict between Donald Trump and Megyn Kelly. All right? That's something we want to talk about. So Donald Trump was accused, mostly accurately, by Megyn Kelly of calling women big fat slobs. He said he did so only of Rosie O'Donnell. Turns out he's done so of other women as well. The on your knees comment was a little closer to the line because the comment, and I've seen the clip from The Apprentice, and I don't watch The Apprentice very much, but this was apparently from season 6. It tells you how hard Fox was working, or Megyn Kelly's staff was working, to take down Donald Trump, that they had to go through season after season of Apprentice to find this kind of thing. But apparently at one point there's a woman and she's, I guess she's a Playboy model or something, and she is thankful that she gets to stay and play the game, and she says that she would have gotten down on her knees and begged to stay, and Donald Trump gave some offhand comment like, well, that would have been a pretty sight. Now, all of this is coarse. All of this is crass. All of this is judging women by their appearance, certainly rather than their intelligence. No question about it. But I guess my question for you is, when does it cross the line? And I want to raise for you a liberal example, because I want to know what the difference is in your mind. There's a famous book written by Al Franken years before he became senator. It's one of my favorite books. I bought it in the 90s, I think. It's called Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. Now, Rush Limbaugh is an idiot, or let's just say he's a smart man who plays an idiot on radio. He's certainly a coarse, horrible human being. He is. He's a nasty fellow. He also gets all his facts wrong. So the whole book was about how he got his facts wrong, and in that way it was sort of an interesting resource, and how right-wing radio just makes up stuff, and some of it's really quite mean. Remember, Rush Limbaugh at one point even accused Michael J. Fox of faking his Parkinson's disease. I mean, gross stuff. But should Al Franken have said big fat idiot? Maybe even big idiot, but fat. Okay, Rush Limbaugh is fat. Should he have brought up his appearance? Is Al Franken as guilty as Donald Trump? Is it too politically correct to say that we shouldn't ever be talking about anyone's appearances? Or do people feel that entertainers, Donald Trump, Al Franken, back when he was an entertainer, should be allowed that kind of talk? What about talk show hosts? What about me? What are your views on that? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When do personal critiques go far? That's your dessert. Answer me after this.
Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So I began school. I began homework talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, talking about China, talking about the interrelation of trade and the economy, and why I am against trade deals like the TPP, and why the Chinese are devaluing their currency. It was meaty stuff. And frankly, I didn't expect anyone to call in on that, though I certainly welcomed your calls. And then I gave you dessert. Dessert was, when does coarse language go too far? There's a huge battle, of course, between Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump when she called him out on some of his offensive comments toward the appearance of women. But comments about appearance, it's not just Donald Trump. Al Franken called Rush Limbaugh a big fat idiot. Now, I detest Rush Limbaugh. And to be fair, he detests me as well. He's called me out by name. I'm very proud of that. I detest everything he stands for. I think he's a coarse, awful human being who calls people names on air. But note that I criticize him for his conduct, for what he says, not for the fact that he's overweight. That's just not something that I would bring up because I think it's kind of unfair. I'd rather criticize someone for what they say than what they are. But Al Franken called Rush Limbaugh a big fat idiot and a big selling book that I bought that shows back in the 90s. This is before Al Franken became senator, before he entered politics. He was basically just a comedian at the time. And it goes through and explains, you know, all the different things Rush Limbaugh gets wrong. If we're going to call out Donald Trump, shouldn't we also call out Al Franken? Is there a difference because it's women rather than men? Is it fair? How fair is it to mock someone you disagree with? And I mean, I'll just give you another example. And this is one actually I did on Megyn Kelly's show. I talked about Rush Limbaugh's drug habit. Now, that is something, again, I would argue is conduct. It's not who he is. It's what he's done. He pled guilty to abusing OxyContin. He stole it from his maid and pled guilty to it. So there can be no doubt that he's done it, right? You plead guilty only when you feel like a trial is going to get you worse. But Megyn Kelly thought it was beyond the pale for me to talk about Rush Limbaugh's drug habit. So when is it beyond the pale? When is it not? That's your dessert. Feel free to call in at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Anyway, I expect many more calls on the dessert. So I'm going to start with my one caller on the meaty topic of the trade deal and the Chinese devaluation today. Mary from New Mexico on line one. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. Well, I would be one of your constituents if I still lived in Crystal City.
Okay. Well, I do represent a small portion of Crystal City.
I work at the Commerce Department, International Trade Administration. So I worked on NAFTA and WTO GATT. We didn't, these trade deals are bad. And there's a columnist that we get in our paper. Her last name is Cepeda. She's a Latina. Mm-hmm. Apparently, is it Ford Motor Company? Anyway, several companies, one in Chicago, car company in Michigan, are going to send their manufacturing down to Juarez. She toured some of that. Those Mexicans, you know, Donald Trump is right. They are making a lot of these things in Mexico, mm-hmm. but they're not paying them well.
Right.
You know,
this is where I agree
really
with
lucky.
Donald Trump. I agree. It's the same populism as Perot talked about, that giant sucking sound of all our jobs going south to Mexico. And
I don't think they really should have blamed Clinton so much, because I think the NAFTA trade agreement was pretty much fait accompli by the before he took office or very shortly thereafter, and they seem to let Congress off the hook because they have to approve that too. But it seemed like a good idea at the time because the European Union was expanding. I mean, I ran the gamut from doing overseas trade shows, many of them, which I think increased our exports probably, you know, and we had a trade surplus and probably increased jobs. And what they're doing now in this country, in this Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's just going to take more jobs away. And what are people going to do here?
I agree with you, Mary, but here's what I find really interesting. You worked for the Commerce Department. You did so under President Obama, right?
No, I worked there from 1970 until 2001.
Oh, so you worked under Clinton and, Nixon, Ford, Carter,
right.
Reagan, Bush. Okay, so you were a career
and
employee.
And one good guy on the Republican side who was my deputy assistant secretary for a while was John Huntsman. I wish he'd get back in the game. He's a smart fella.
Yeah, well, John Huntsman to me is like John Kasich. He's far too reasonable to ever get a Republican nomination.
But I mean, we had a trade deficit. We had a trade surplus in those days. You know, we had 11 trade centers. Reagan canceled them all. I mean, so much that is wrong in this country now can be, it may have been thought about before the Reagan administration, but it was certainly implemented, from the unions to the not enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act to putting in the 401k so companies got out of their retirement plans and now sick leave and vacation time. And I mean,
I could let you go on and on and on, Mary, because I'm agreeing with every word you say. Here's my question for you. You're obviously you sound like a Democrat, a progressive. But you are a career
independent vote Democrat.
Okay, independent that votes Democrat. Fair enough. Here's the thing. You were working in the government a very long time. You have more institutional knowledge than I do, certainly from the inside. 31 years is a very long time. Help me understand.
Well, that wasn't the only place. I also worked at Johnson's White House on the Vietnam War.
Wow. You don't sound old enough to have done all that. But here's my question. 31 years or longer, 35 years, 40 years in government, working on trade issues for decades. Help me understand why Bill Clinton supported NAFTA, and help me further understand why President Obama is pushing the TPP so far. I get how it helps business. I get how it hurts labor. I understand why establishment Republicans support it. No question Mitt Romney loves this thing. Why are Democratic presidents supporting this kind of stuff?
Well, with Clinton, you know, I mean, it came up so new in his administration, and I would have to say maybe we working on it, you know, we were assigned industries by their standard industrial classification number. I had heavy equipment of various sorts, but I'm a very girly girl.
They didn't put you on a big tractor to test it out, no?
Oh, yeah, John Deere, Caterpillar, etc.
All right, go ahead.
But I think, you know, probably he didn't want to be disagreeable. Clinton's a very smart man. I'm not sure whether.
Okay. We didn't know at the time.
I have heard with Obama, I don't know, that Citibank or something actually paid these are the two main advisors, whoever is right now the Undersecretary of International Trade at Commerce, and the U.S. trade rep, and that one of them got a $9 million bonus for going government and the other one $5 million or $6 million.
I really hope that's not true. I fear it is. The revolving door of government and lobbyists is just so disgusting.
Oh, yeah. So I think he's getting bad advice.
Let me ask you about my position on it and just see if you agree, particularly since you've had all this expertise. And I'll be clear to our listeners, I did not have Mary call in this. I've never met Mary before. So she could tell me something. She could disagree with me. My position on the TPP is not that it's all bad. I am fine with trade deals with Japan, with Singapore, with North Korea, because those three countries are industrialized democracies. They're countries where the labor costs are high, the cost of living are high. To me, that's fair competition. If they can make it better than we can, then maybe we need to learn something. Where I disagree with the TPP is where it includes poverty-stricken dictatorships like Vietnam and Malaysia, where they can undercut our American workers, not competing on fair ground, but basically because they're mistreating their workers. And I'm curious to know if you agree with me that I would the interesting thing about the TPP, they're like, well, it's 40% of the world's economy. Well, it is just the United States, Japan, Singapore, and South Korea are like 39%. So I would just excise that 1%, the Vietnam and Malaysia, and then I'm fine with the TPP. Do you agree with me?
I absolutely agree with you. I took a trade mission to China in 1984. It was backward there then, you know, and I don't think people earned even a dollar an hour. But now China's getting too expensive, you know, so they want to move off. I thought the WTO gap covered the entire world. So this seems like a trade agreement within a trade agreement. And
true.
Supposedly Obama wants to isolate China. You know, and maybe, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not party to, you know, the exact goings on, if I ever was. You know, I mean, we got
right.
our marching orders from the U.S. Trade Rep's office and you know, followed the grid to do what they said. I had some disagreements on WTO GATT. They says, oh, we'll be a service economy, and then pretty soon you're calling Bangalore to get your...
Exactly.
Credit card straightened out, so, you know, leaving the crumbs
let me say this.
Over for American workers.
Yeah, I support free trade when I feel that we're trading on fair grounds, when I feel that we're competing. You know, if we're competing against France or Germany or Japan. That's fair. They have advanced industrialized economies. They have labor practices there. They treat their workers fairly. Let's let the best country win. I understand that, you know, France may make wine better, although we got some great ones in California. You know, we may make wheat better. That makes sense to me. I have a degree in economics. They teach you this kind of stuff. But I don't agree where it's not fair. And that's where I think that, you know, Mexico and Malaysia and so forth, they're undercutting our labor. So thank you, Mary, for calling in on my meaty topic. I really thought everyone was going to go for the dessert. I want to thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I'm not going to come. Well, I think name calling is
juvenile.
Grade school, playground, kind of crap, but they do that.
Fair enough. Thank you for calling in, Mary. I appreciate it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to move on to my dessert because I got a bunch of you who want to talk about it. When does it go too far? If we're going to condemn Donald Trump, shouldn't we also condemn Al Franken? When is name calling okay? I mean, I think Rush Limbaugh is a jerk. Is that, can I say that? Am I being too coarse? 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Today we had meat and dessert. We had a very meaty discussion on trade policy. And if we have time, we'll still go back to it. But I want to give you your dessert. When does court's language go too far? It is true. Donald Trump has made some really nasty comments about women that he didn't like. Okay, I happen to like Rosie O'Donnell. But he doesn't like her. He called her a big fat slob. Well, you know, commenting on women's appearance, that's kind of mean, rather than taking at her ideas. But he's an entertainer. You know, Howard Stern had Megyn Kelly on his radio show, and they spent time talking about the size of her breasts. And yes, I'm sorry to say this on the air, at least Howard Stern brought up the size of her husband's penis. That's probably the first and last time I'm going to say that word on this show. But the point is that Megyn Kelly went there in an entertainment setting. Does it matter that the entertainer is now running for president? So she raised up something from Donald Trump's entertainment past. Now he's got to be president. And again, my example is Al Franken, who I like and who wrote a book that I bought called Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. Should he have been asked the same questions before he ran for senator? I'm trying to be fair here. Let's see what Dan from California says on line three. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Hey, Mark. I want to compliment you on your show. It's down to the great Tom Hartman, you, and Leslie Marshall here in Roanoke Park as far as streaming or any type of good radio talk.
Well, I'm glad you have us. Thank you.
I hate this, the dessert topic normally, but today I kind of like it. But you left off the cherry on top,
okay,
which is Al Franken's title. The part that makes it funny is his subtitle.
Lying Liars and the Liars Who Give Them, I think, was it called? Something like that?
Well, I remember the title as Rush Limbaugh's a Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations.
Oh, and Other Observations.
That's true. Yeah. Anyway, given who Rush Limbaugh is, what he's done, what he's said, I agree that, you know, you're lowering your standards when you call it name call. But in his case, doesn't it feel good to see somebody who did that?
Well, yeah, it does. Here's my question. So I just called Rush Limbaugh a name. I called him a jerk. I could think of some other choice words, frankly, that I can't say on the air. And the other thing I've said about him, and I've said this publicly on TV, is I made fun of his addiction to OxyContin. That actually made Megyn Kelly very upset with me when I said that on her show. To me, those comments are fair because when I call him a jerk or I make fun of his drug habit, these are actions based on what he's done. I wonder about,
exactly,
just say it, that three-letter word, fat. All right? Because, you know, there's good fat people. There's bad fat people. People are very sensitive to being overweight. Maybe.
Yeah, that's their problem.
Well, you know, I wonder if he called Rosie O'Donnell a big slob without the word fat, just a big slob. You know, well, she is kind of slobby. I mean, I don't know. That's something you can correct about your appearance. I happen to like Rosie O'Donnell. But my point is, are we looking at this through a left-right lens, or are there certain standards that we should have for everybody?
The former is true, I think.
Yeah,
too many people are looking through that lens.
Does it matter whether it's a woman or a man that you're insulting?
To me, it doesn't. No.
Okay, so in general, we should.
I'm an equal opportunity insulter.
Equal opportunity insulter. When is insulting appearance appropriate? I got to tell you this, and I got dinged. I had someone wrote me, sent me an email, and thank you for doing this because I got dinged myself 2 days ago when I was talking about Bernie Sanders. I mentioned the fact that he doesn't comb his hair. And I actually found it a little bit endearing. Frankly, Einstein didn't comb his hair either. To me, it shows someone who's so deep in thought, they don't have time for personal grooming. But I suggested that was perhaps a little less presidential. And I got dinged by someone who wrote in that said, Mark, how can you attack this man's appearance? Did I go too far in saying Bernie Sanders doesn't comb his hair? Should I not have said that? What do you think?
Absolutely not.
Is that okay to say that?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
It's not okay to say that.
You didn't. I mean, no, you didn't go too far.
I didn't go too far. Okay. All right. Just want to know.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Dan. I appreciate it. Will from Colorado on line 4. When does coarse language go too far in the public sphere?
Well, I think it depends on a case-by-case basis. And the example that you gave, I would say that Donald Trump went too far, but Al Franken did not for
What's
three
the difference?
Reasons.
Okay.
One, I know Al Franken's book was intended to be humorous. It was intended to giving a funny phrase and actually make a funny spin on the fact that Rush Limbaugh's opinions and his behaviors make him look like an idiot.
Well, it wasn't.
I mean, that's an accurate statement.
Fair enough. But wasn't Donald Trump also trying to be funny? I mean, he didn't call Rosie O'Donnell a big fat slob in a political context. He was just.
Well, this was a serious debate. This was
no, but he didn't raise the issue. Megyn Kelly,
candidate for president.
Yeah, that's true. But Megyn Kelly raised the issue when he called Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes.
Oh, you mean his response to her? Oh, okay. Yeah, he did raise his response to her.
Yeah, and part of the point is that she gave him an opportunity to say that was entertainment, Donald Trump. I was trying to be funny. I was trying to get ratings. I am presidential, Donald Trump. I would never get any. Denigrate women in such a way. I was making a joke back then. I am not making a joke now.
Okay.
He saw
I don't think there's such a thing as presidential Donald Trump. I think presidential Donald Trump is an oxymoron. I think those two things are illogical.
I agree with you.
But give me the other two. You said there were three reasons. I want to get to your other two. So you gave that one.
Yeah, like the phrase itself, big fat, can apply to anything. It doesn't necessarily apply to Rush Limbaugh's size as much as the fact that, and this is the third one too, he is in fact an idiot of a very large scale.
Well,
he could
ask
be
you this.
120 pounds.
Yes, I was going to say, can you call a 120-pound person a big fat idiot? So maybe, I mean, can
some people, yes.
I guess you can. So your argument is that fat really didn't apply to appearance with Al Franken talking about Rush Limbaugh. It applied to Limbaugh's ideas, and I agree. It's always fair to attack ideas. Always fair to attack ideas.
Yeah. So,
but with O'Donnell, it was more appearance based. All right, that's actually an interesting distinction. It used to be part of the phrase, and he just happens to be fat.
Right.
All right. Fair enough. You're fading out a little bit, so I'll end the call here. Will, thank you very much for calling in. Bob from California on line 1, you wanted to go to the meat of the topic, and I'm running out of time. So I'm going to ask you just to post it on Twitter, if you would, at Mark Levine Talk. Sorry, I'm shocked. I got to tell you, I'm really proud of my audience. Because we have so much time on the meat. Okay, real quick, got 15 seconds. Go. Oh, we're running out of time. Real quick. That is not enough time. Yeah, not enough time. I didn't think there was enough time. Bob, I want to thank you for calling in. Feel free to call in tomorrow. And let me say this. I got the best audience in talk radio. I gave you meat and dessert, and I got as many calls on the meat as I did on the dessert. That's amazing. I'll talk to you tomorrow.